You're in the locker room.
As somebody that has a serious interest in the future of work, we are at a pivotal point in time. The roles that our children are about to consider haven't even been invented yet. That's a hell of a question to answer, isn't it?
Do you think AI will remove any of the bias that you sometimes see in these bespoke or handwritten pieces?
I think, you know, we've still got a long way to go there. You know, if you could push that spec through some sort of app that then allows you to get really incredible salary data alongside it. So you can say to ChatGPT, now I've created this job specification, please review this spec across the market rates for comparable roles. And then you've got real deep data, which you can then present to your clients and say, look, guys, you're just miles away from where you need to be. That would be really useful. And obviously that would be something, no doubt, that will come down the line as it's pulling out data points from whatever form. I think does it solve a problem? I think that it does solve a problem, because for me, in terms of recruitment best practice, to get the definition of the role from the start of the process with something that both parties can sign off on that says, look, this is what good looks like, is fundamentally one of the core building blocks of recruitment best practice, and something our industry does absolutely terribly. Okay, so we need to get that down, and if we've got a process that allows us to do that, that would be great. If we can instruct it to remove masculine bias, so it's actually more appealing to a more diverse workforce. If I write a job specification, you know, typically it has a masculine sense and feel about it, and so we need to make sure that it's appealing to all sorts of people from all sorts of diverse backgrounds. And I need that sense check. You know, I have unconscious bias, as we all do. So if ChatGPT pushes back and says, look, there are lines in this text which are just completely wrong, let's replace this with something that is a little bit more inclusive, that has got to be a positive thing. And actually, just by you asking me that question, and anybody that's watching this, I think that's a really interesting and important, valid point. Maybe we should all, off the back of just listening to this, and if we're using ChatGPT, ask it to say, is this job specification inclusive? Do you sense any bias in the job specification? There is no doubt some clever person right now, some little coding wizard out there, who is building something along the lines of that. And I, part of some of the ideas that I've got for our new website, will look at addressing some of those things. Just to diversify and go off a tangent slightly, recruitment for hiring managers is a bit like kind of going on location with Phil and Kirsty, right? So, you know, what happens is that if you don't define the job specification, you go on your house hunt, right? And you end up seeing lots of different houses, one with a double garage, one with a lovely walled garden, one with a beautiful open plan kitchen. You go on, you view these properties, and then you hear somebody saying to Phil, oh, I wish if I could have this house in this location, this would be the one, right? And Phil says to them, look, you've just not got the budget for that. That is the same thing in recruitment. What happens is the role's not defined particularly well, and then the interviews start to happen. The client says, oh, I'd like a little bit of that with that candidate, and a little bit of that with that candidate, and that. And then they make it up in their head. They don't tell anybody. And then the recruiter misses the mark continually because it's changed. And so using AI to build the spec, to define the spec that gets signed off, that all the parties keep referring back to, keeps us on the straight and narrow. And when I refer back to the CTO recruitment that we did that incredibly well. And it was just seamless because everybody understood where we were. And I use AI to produce that job specification. So it really does work.
It does work. And I think one in two organizations don't have an approach, a methodology to ensure it's a bias-free process. And you think it's kind of worrying in current climate. But let's hop across to, I like the location reference. Always wanted to go on that show, got to be honest.
Me too.
Phil's amazing. Let's hop across from a candidate's perspective then. So there's a lot of chatter, quite rightly and quite understandably, around neurodivergence. It's usually aimed from a candidate's lens, because candidates are seen as the one under the swinging spotlight when you're kind of going through that process. you're the one joining the teams, you're the one who somehow feels like you have to prove yourself culturally that you can be a fit, when actually, for my money at least, you know, there's, again, it's a two-way street that. But has AI, as part of a recruitment or a hiring process, supported, would you say, those that are neurodivergent, maybe highly introverted? Do you think it in any way aids them, or do you think there's still something that, from an organization's perspective, they very badly and quickly need to learn?
Well, that's just, wow, what a question that is. How do we come at that? I think that, let's just start with the whole concept and the whole discussion around neurodivergence for a second. I mean, it's come into my orbit in the last 12 months because I met two people, both autistic ADHD, both entrepreneurs, both have challenges in their life. One's actually a career coach, one's a CTO, and an incredible person. And through talking to them, I identified some neurodivergent traits in myself and started to then become hyper-focused on what is neurodivergence. Because if you are neurodivergent, you are going to hyper-focus on things. So by the very fact that I did that, I started to kind of almost double down on this. Well, hold on a minute. What the hell's going on here? Since then, I've spotted neurodivergence everywhere, in everyone, not necessarily everyone, but I'm looking at everyone. And seeing the world in a completely different way has been an absolute light bulb moment for me as a recruiter and as a human being. I'm spotting ADHD traits in so many people. People that I can see are suppressing their energy. They're wanting to talk. The classic ADHD side is continually cutting people off, you know, wanting to talk because the thought will go into their head and then out really quickly. They've got to get it out. I mean, you might argue that that's just a normal human trait, but when you look at it at the extreme level, you start to sort of really get a sense of that. With autism in particular, one of the things is around missing some of those social cues. And in business and in recruitment, sometimes you can miss those things. And obviously in technology, when we talk about 20% of the population being neurodivergent, in technology, the percentage is much, 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 much higher just by the nature of what we do in technology. And so it's everywhere. Now, the question is, can AI support and help people that are neurodivergent? The answer is yes, because what they can start to do is hopefully have some sort of awareness that they have a neurodivergence of some sort, but utilize AI to help them. So, for example, they may have some sort of interaction with a hiring manager or a recruiter, and they want to understand the best way to revert back to that. Now, somebody that may be autistic might give a very, very, very transactional, cold, single line answer, because it's factual and it's logical, and that's what you asked me for that, and that's what you're going to get. Whereas it might be that if you're trying to kind of warm the relationship, that actually you need to do a little bit more than that. I'm actually coaching a young guy at the moment who is autistic ADHD. He's actually about to get into working in AI, weirdly. He's about to finish his degree. When I talk to him, it's just totally factual. There's nothing else there. It's just that. So I think that ChatGPT can probably help and support people with how they communicate and how they understand communication and how they respond to communication. Now, it's dangerous because you have to be your authentic self. You can't be like Mr. ChatGPT. So you have to have an awareness that, you know, when you do work in a company, that you are going to have to be you. So that, like in anything in life, it's always about finding the right balance. But if you can start to warm the communication, build awareness, maybe through using technology, but also then for me, being honest, you know, I had quite a few conversations, which is, would you tell an employer that you are neurodivergent? That's a big question. So I'm talking about at the start of a recruitment process as a candidate, would you put it out there? I did a survey and it was a 50-50 split, you know, between yes and no. So that when I'm talking about this, you know, you have this ChatGPT, you warm the person up, you're in, now it's day one. You have to find the balance between being authentically you, being honest. My view is you should be honest. You should explain at some point in the process the neurodivergence and hope that the employer is going to do the right thing. I don't know, again, to answer that question in a really roundabout way, but I think that you know, I see the world that way. And I like to think that organizations, especially in tech, because if you remember what I said earlier, we are trailblazers. So many industries are so, so far behind us. But in tech, we are really pushing the boundaries. We're thinking about adaptations for neurodivergence. You know, tech leaders are aware that in certain situations that neurodivergence can make somebody in coding, in tech, and data absolutely superhuman. And I know through talking to people who have got neurodivergent children with autism that neurodivergence is not a superpower. It's really hard. It's really tough. And I've learned that through talking about it in a real positive way. And they said, hold on a minute, Simon. You know what? Neurodivergence is not a superpower. It's really fucking hard. Yeah. It's really challenging as a parent to understand that. And I think I'm just, as you can tell, very passionate about the whole subject.
Yeah, and rightly so. And I think that there's a lot that people still don't understand. And unusually, I think in this sort of current climate of social media, and you can sit and surf through your platform of choice, and within 20 minutes you'll have covered a spectrum of things that, you know, cover everything from how to make cookies through to, I don't know, how to implant chips in people's heads if you're Elon Musk. You've got everything in between, but it's super important. And one of the things that I find really interesting there is your poll on would you declare it, your neurodiversity. And this is something that's close to my heart as well, but I think the worrying thing out of that is those that feel that they wouldn't is probably because they'd be concerned still about the reaction from an employer who kind of goes, oh, well, that's just going to be hard work. I don't know what to do with it. I don't know how to deal with that. Yeah, and there are, and admittedly, hands up, it's only over sort of recent years where you know this has become much more in the spotlight, and you learn more about it, and you know through whatever personal links you kind of find that level of education. And you sit and look at maybe somebody who's quiet in a team, maybe in a big meeting, they don't necessarily contribute. Again, 20 years or so ago, it'd just be you're not saying anything, get up in front of this whole room, you're too quiet, don't like that, give us your opinion, I'm paying you for a reason, right? And that's just like, oh, pff, that's exploding lemon moment for you know, some folks with neurodivergence. And you can't do that. And I think that the awareness and the understanding from an employer to not presume that just because somebody's quiet doesn't mean they're not contributing, or to not presume that they're not the class clown and all the rest of it, and that comes with that, because actually that can swing the other way. You know, it's about really assessing people's capability on a capability level, and that authenticity that you touch on, you know, it's something I hold massively dear. So I always try and encourage my team. I don't really care who and what you are. I genuinely don't. If you're doing the job that you're here to do, and you're doing it in a way that shows that you care, shows that you're passionate in some way, whether that's just through the code that you produce or the product that you produce or how you interact with people. Not all neurodivergent people are introverts. Not all, you know, you've met one, right? Everybody's different, just like neurotypical, which I'm still not sure I get on with that expression. But anyway, I think there's still a lot of learning that needs to happen if we're going to turn that 50% into 100% of people who would declare it.
Look, one of the things that's interesting, and I really got a sense of this. So when I got into the neurodivergence learning last year, I put a post out on LinkedIn about a situation that I'd experienced. At the time, I didn't really realize what it was, but I got feedback from a client that said, we're rejecting the candidate because he really struggled with eye contact. He stuttered, so we didn't really feel he had the right level of communication, you know, skills. And we put him under pressure with some competency-based interviews, and he really struggled with it. So he's a no. And I ended up talking to him, and he then said that he was autistic. And I was just like, right, first of all, you don't know what you don't know. So the client had no idea. So I'm going to let them off. But secondly, just be aware that when you're interviewing people, it's not because they have some kind of human deficiency. It's not a disorder, okay? It is just because somebody is different. They're wired differently. I had something like 250,000 impressions on that post. I had people from all over the world contacting me. It's on my featured content section on my LinkedIn profile. I wrote it literally in a morning like that. You often do as a content sort of creator. I wouldn't say I'm a content creator, but if you create content, sometimes some of the best posts you do are just straight out of your head, straight on and out, because it's completely emotional and it goes out. And that really got me thinking about the whole interview process for a candidate generally, but also candidates that have neurodivergence, because I hate competency-based interview processes. You know, the idea that you have got to, you know, go into the dark depths of your brain and pick out some example that you did 4 years ago that in some way demonstrates in that moment that you have done something that they want you to have done, right? I just think, you know, I have the same view on exams. 2 years, you're feeling rotten on the day. You're feeling anxious on the day. You've got, you're feeling ill. You know, you've had a rough night's sleep the night before because you're so anxious about your exam. You're not performing to your best. And in that moment, 3.5 hours is going to get you either an A, a B, a C, whatever it's going to be, right? It's just, for me, not the right way to assess people's capability, both the exam route, and I know that that's, you know, a contentious subject, but also the interview route. We should be interviewing people based on values, behaviors, technical capabilities, but we want to be looking at them exhibiting those things in a different way, with tasks, with things that they feel that they want to invest in, some sort of gamification, which is, hey, you know what, you might not get the job, but hey, it was great fun. And actually allowing people to exhibit their core skill sets and capabilities in a totally different way. I just think that competency-based interviewing processes, I just need to be flung out of the window. There are different ways that you can assess people's capabilities. Competency-based interviewing is typically done by people that don't know how to interview. They need a framework. They need questions on a pad. They can't assess capability without that structure. Okay, and that's fine. That's fine. People need help. It's not an easy task, okay? You've got 3 or 4 interviews. You want to measure people the same way throughout the process. You need some level of consistency. But asking scary interview questions in that way, for me, is not the way it should be done. And the best companies that I'm seeing, the best hiring managers, are not interviewing people that way. They are allowing people to relax, be authentic, be themselves. They're getting them tied into a concept or a technology or a product. And then they are getting into the subject matter in different ways and evidencing that subject matter and capability in different ways, not with a cold texted competency-based question.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you feel about that, Neil?
Do you know what? I've never been a fan. I'm never somebody who's been great at exams, full stop. So any interviews where it's, like you say, that kind of pressurized, I think any one of us, however experienced you are, will go, and that's why, you know, these sessions, I always find very interesting doing these, because I'm firing questions at people like yourself and kind of going, answer me, give me your immediate feedback. And so those kind of competency-based things, I agree. In the absence of anything else, it's all the company's got to fall back on, and it doesn't work.
I would say to you that the majority of candidates that go through competency-based interviews have negative feelings towards the company they're about to go and work for. So a classic case is they have the kind of chemistry call, the getting to know you call, which I think in tech has now become a thing. The hiring manager will have a chat about the opportunity and they'll get a bit of a sense, which is great. And if you're not doing that, you absolutely must do that part of the process. Companies that are, or hiring managers that are very busy or don't prioritize recruitment, go straight into interview, bang, do the warm-up chemistry call if you can. But what happens then is it's like, yeah, we think the guys, I got on with him, on the, you know, face value, really good. And then they throw him into some cold competency interview. All that good has been undone in that moment. Yeah. And then what happens is the candidate gets 2 options. They get the lovely warm and fuzzy approach with a good structured recruitment approach, or they get the cold competency-based approach, which doesn't work for them. And also tech testing as well. You know, tech testing is, for many tech people, I think, again, I've done polls on it. It's surprising how many people do like testing as part of the recruitment process. But when I've run polls on LinkedIn, it's 80-20. So 80% hate it, 20% like it. So there are people that like it. It's not completely 100%. But for me, you do testing when you've got the candidate almost at offer stage. They are so engaged in the process. They're more than happy and understand why you might need to technically test somebody. And again, neurodivergence, tech testing, you know, being measured in that moment is difficult. I see it from both sides, the employer and the employee as well.
And I think regardless of the role you're coming into, you know, being brave enough to say, can I meet some of the team, please? Before you're prepared to accept, if you got that far, or before you're even keen to take up whatever the next level might be, you know, be brave enough to ask, can I talk to some of my peers? Can I sit in with the team for an hour, join a team meeting, maybe sign an NDA? I don't care. But, you know, how can I just get that sense of what I'm walking into properly?
LinkedIn, let's bring the conversation into the power of LinkedIn. But LinkedIn is an amazing thing because I think the etiquette around LinkedIn has changed. I'd like to promote anyway that the etiquette of LinkedIn has changed. If you're in an interview situation, you should already be connected to all of the stakeholders that are interviewing you. So the minute you get an interview request with a hiring manager, you connect. But also, you should be connecting with your future co-workers in that moment. You should be fishing for information, sending them a connection request, asking them, they accept your connection request. Hey, thanks a lot. I'm really interested in working for the company. Love to hear your thoughts. I can see you've been with the company for 18 months. What's it been like? Okay, now, if you hear nothing, then it's one of two things. They're not on LinkedIn very much, or they would prefer not to have the conversation. But hopefully you're going to get some positivity from some people, or if you get lots of engagement and positivity, then you just get a sense of what that looks like. Plus, in fact, it's just a really bloody good network connecting and building thing to do. So you can do that. I think a lot of organizations, a lot of people have an awareness now of Glassdoor. And, you know, again, you should be checking out Glassdoor as well as part of that process. But fundamentally, and I know we wanted to touch on this personal brand thing, you know, you have got to, before you even get into the recruitment, get into the interviewing process, you've got to set your stall out now. You've got to build out your personal brand. So many tech people in this last sort of 6 to 9 month period have really realized that dusting off your CV and putting the latest job onto the document you've had for 15 years, that is not the way it works anymore. It is actually a full-time sport. And I'm not saying that you should sometimes be some sort of kind of content creator or thought leader or influencer. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about setting up yourself, your capabilities, your personality, your achievements, your values, and your you know, the sense of who you are and what you're all about. It's setting that up and getting that onto LinkedIn. Now, you know what? If we were going to create this idea of how do we present ourselves to an employer, if we were going to scrap CVs, let's imagine for a second that CVs just don't exist, that it's just not a thing. That horrible reverse chronological order format, because we're all better than that now. Like, we're all more creative than that now. That's gone. We would create a different platform and a different way of communicating what we do. It'd kind of be like a personalized website form. And actually, I still, as much as we all kind of love LinkedIn, LinkedIn is really pretty average. If you think about it that way, you know, does it allow me to really get over all the amazing things that I've done, the tech, the projects, the achievements? Is it really any good as a platform? I don't think it is. It looks really, if you look at it through those eyes, it looks really old fashioned and really old school. But we work with the platform that we've got. We make it as good as we can make it. And what I'm saying to people now, especially in the tech leadership space, you have got to have a personal brand when you're not even looking for a job. You've got to build that out. It's got to be continual. You've got to be continually doing it. And the people that I'm seeing who have suddenly been caught with their pants down are contractors who have had a really tough time, contractors that work in fractional, so people that work, you know, obviously odd days of work, project leaders, project managers that have found themselves at difficult times because projects just haven't been coming through. They're suddenly going, well, my CV's just not working. What am I going to do? And now they're coming to me as a career coach and job hunt coach and saying, what's the situation? I'm like, guys, the game's changed. It's totally changed. You know, I don't know what the statistics are, but if you have a LinkedIn profile with no backdrop and no photo, you are pretty much invisible. That's the starting point of this conversation. So it's like, let's just start there. That little line underneath your photo is the most important line anywhere, and literally anywhere, CV and also on LinkedIn. And by the way, we talk, you know, if you're looking at this from a techie perspective, as a recruiter at the back end using LinkedIn Recruiter, the UX is really clunky. It's not great at all. And it takes a while for me as a recruiter to find a CV. It's not like there. I've got to go searching for it, right? There's a reason for that. And that is that LinkedIn wants you to be a profile first recruiter, okay? They want you to, if you're applying for a job on LinkedIn, they want you to kind of assess the person on LinkedIn. So you look at the LinkedIn profile first, and then you validate the LinkedIn profile with the CV, okay? It's a really important point, that is, because if you think your CV is amazing, but your LinkedIn profile is a bit crap, you've got to flip it.
That's not easy for people to get on board with, is it? And because again, you kind of, everybody's different. It's not always your bag. And I know I put something up at the end of last week, which is, you know, to be patient when people do put posts up, because I think there are a lot of people who are embarking on that journey with support from people like yourself, kind of going, this is where you've got to be. Unfortunately, there's been a lot of people put on the jobs market over the last 6 to 12 months that didn't expect that, and now they are trying to pick up those pieces. But that kind of, you know, that rejection sort of syndrome, that sensitivity to rejection, if somebody, not quite Facebook styly, but if somebody kind of goes, I disagree with your opinion, which everyone's entitled to do, as long as it's done professionally and respectfully, of course. But people embarking on that journey, they're not used to it. So it's a whole new world that they find themselves in. It doesn't mean spit out 3 blogs daily. It doesn't mean put out a video every second day. It could be something as small, like you say, as just liking posts that align themselves to you as whatever your role is, whatever your leadership style is, wherever it may be, but associating yourself with a line of content, a line of brand effectively that does exactly that. And so I think a lot of people struggle as to where to start, other than picking up the phone and speaking to you. What would your biggest piece of advice be, I guess?
Right. Love the subject. And I feel like the recruitment industry just don't do this. So for me, when I set up 432 Consulting a year ago, I wanted to plug this little segment that allows me to answer the question that you just asked, which is, you know, how do you start to build out your personal brand as a tech leader or as a tech professional? And what do you do? And you've got kind of beginner, intermediate and advanced kind of levels in that sense. The beginner level is get a nice smiley photo, a friendly photo, get a backdrop that says something about you, and get a strap line that says what you do and what you're passionate about. Stage one. Okay. Get a summary section on your CV, on your profile around really what you do for a living, what you've delivered, and those sort of kind of core capabilities. So when I work with people through the coaching, we build out the capability pillars, these core capability pillars, and they start to build to become what I call the personal value proposition, just pulling everything together that makes you the awesome, hopefully the awesome person that you are. Now, when I go through the coaching sessions, those pillars are coming from everywhere. And actually, as a leader, there are so many pillars. And actually, there are pillars that you've forgotten are even pillars, because you have this unconscious competence. You do so much stuff over so many years, you forget all the cool stuff that you do. And I'm like, hold on a minute, let's get that one in. That's bloody brilliant. So within the process of building the personal value proposition, understand the capability pillars, we then start to build this kind of about section, which is where we start to get in kind of like the intermediate level, start to learn and understand and know about yourself. That's really, really important. Within that intermediate section of your LinkedIn profile and being visible, I use the rule of three. So underneath the job, we have the rule of three: introduction to the company, introduction to the role, and then the role and responsibilities, the projects, and the outcomes or delivery that you're involved in. Three things. It's amazing how many people on LinkedIn profiles do not state what their employer does. Okay. Now, what we have to do is click in the little logo, and then that takes us to the company. But a lot of people don't do that. So, big bit of advice for anybody. make sure you outline just for a sentence or two what you do. So it might be that I am working with a leading biotech biotech business. We're building out this product in this stack, and I'm responsible for this. It's a sentence and a half, but instantly I'm like zooming in on that. I've got a client that works in life sciences. I've got a client that works in a similar stack. I've got a role that fits something around those things. That line gives me, or gives the candidate, a few more seconds of my time, because I'm like, right, I'm going to take it to the next level. So we're building out the pillars. We're building out the personal value proposition. We're using the rule of three under each role. And what we've got is the starting point of a really nice looking profile. And what happens is that people have no idea where to start with that. It's really difficult, really difficult. They need an expert that knows about tech, that knows about jobs in tech, and that knows about broader careers of what is the future. And that's the niche that I operate in, and it works really, really well. So that's level two, that's intermediate. And then you've got advanced. So now you've got this incredible profile. You feel really good about things because, number one, you've rediscovered who you are. You're feeling confident in your proposition. And if you were to imagine yourself building your own personal website, you'd have the about section and have the services section, and then you have the contact section. So you think about yourself almost like in website terms with when you build a new profile. The advanced section is then the networking section, the connection section, the commenting and content sections, the final part of the jigsaw puzzle. If you get the intermediate bit done well and your profile is optimized well, headhunters will find you. Bear in mind that only 30% of leadership tech roles are advertised. 70% come through search and headhunting, right? So you've got to get the profile done to even be seen and to be visible, right? So, but the third part is around following companies that you want to work for, connecting with future line managers, connecting with future co-workers. You know, if you're working in an education technology or any kind of tech, ed tech, biotech, health tech, whatever it is, pick 25 companies that you would like to work for, connect with the future hiring managers, connect with your future co-workers. Make that the advanced level. That's stage one. Stage two, utilize some of your background and experience, but do it in comments. Maybe you're not ready to put your content out yet. But comments are brilliant content. They're probably even better than writing your own content. Follow a thread, follow a theme, offer your advice, offer your insight. People will view you. People will want to follow you or connect with you. Third section then, I've got an incredible idea. I had a situation with one of my team. I resolved it this way. I think I can share that insight that I think people will feel there's some value. That's content creation. Put some content creation out there. So, three stages: beginner, advanced, beginner, intermediate, advanced, personal brand development, personal value proposition. That's what I do with 432. It's an incredible thing to do. I hope that by me summarizing that for you, Neil, and anybody that's watching, that gives them some of the core building blocks that they need. If you do not do that, if you are a person that has just literally got your CV and put the job on top, you are going to struggle in this market right now. That's the message. And like you said, I don't have any problem with putting it out there. And I'm telling you that for the last 6 to 9 months, it's been a tough market in tech. You've got to go the extra mile and do that.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And it wasn't, I'm still kind of learning that particular curve myself. But it's amazing how quickly it kind of happens and changes and you get comfortable with it. But it's super important. It does change the game. I'll put links to all of Simon's areas, whether that's the recruitment arm or his career coaching side. I'll put them in the links to the video below when you're watching this back. So if you let Simon know you found him in the locker room, and I'm sure he'll give you 0.5% off.
You know the way I work is, if you're working with me as a candidate, you get all of that great stuff for free. You know, I end up sort of saying, I can't present you to my client unless we do some stuff with your profile, with your CV. A lot of recruiters will do an element of that, but what they don't do is can completely deconstruct and reconstruct some, not just somebody's profile, but somebody's whole mindset around what it is that they do. And that can be quite daunting for people, quite stressful for people, but it's, everybody that I work with are like, that is one of the best things I've done. And you know what, it's difficult in life because you can't talk to your partner about it because they don't live in your techie world. You can't talk to your boss about it because you're about to leave. You can't talk to your co-workers about it because it's confidential. So what happens is within careers and within your life, you live in your own echo chamber so much. One of the few areas that you really, really do. And there isn't really, for me, a place, you know, outwardly that deals with that. And that's where 432 comes into play. I could literally go and set that business up as a standalone business right now and run that. Right now.
It's almost therapeutic, isn't it? It's and I don't say that lightly. I don't you know, therapy services provide what they provide for all good reasons, but for not dissimilar reasons to what you just said there, it's difficult to find the right people to talk to about the right things. Coaching, career coaching, you know, I'm a huge advocate that everybody should have a mentor. You know, everybody should have that person that maybe they once worked with, maybe they found somewhere along a different journey, but that person they can go to who gives them warts and all truth, but advice, good, solid advice and guidance that isn't the spouse, isn't somebody they work with because they run a risk there. It's about having that space to be able to go and just speak openly, speak honestly, help them help you in building your brand, your identity and who you want to be in the next role or the next chapter of your current role, wherever it may be. Have you ever sold out for a fee, Simon?